It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome back to the Hockey News Podcast, presented by BetMGM and McKinney. I'm Mike Stevens, sitting across from me is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How's it going?
It's going great. Going swimmingly, even. It's a little little murky outside in Toronto right now. Mm-hmm. You know, we're getting to that time. But boy, is the drama, I would say the storylines. I just threw my phone off.
That was amazing.
The storylines in the NHL are ripping hot.
Indeed, you know? They are.
And so we might as well just hop into it, right? Speaking of a team that usually their namesake would be in a place that is ripping hot all the time, the New Jersey Devils. Yeah. Look, on the first episode that we did together to start this season, to kick off all the fun, we talked about how the Devils were maybe going to be one of the lottery teams again. We were talking about how Lindy Ruff was getting booed in the home opener, about how he was my, at least for me, was my like first coach to get fired on the year when it came to likelihood. And now they're, like we said, they're lava hot. They're second in their division. They're 6-3-0. They just beat the Blue Jackets 7-1. Everything's going great for New Jersey right now.
Yeah, Jesper Bratt is one of the top scorers in the NHL, which always helps. And what's interesting to me is, in terms of goaltending, Vitek Vanacek has been the guy. And what I like is that the Devils have put him in a position to succeed.
Yes.
His last three games, all wins, hasn't faced more than 24 shots in any of those games.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's legitimately absurd.
That's fantastic suppression if you were the Devils.
Yeah.
And a great way to win games. Obviously, scoring 7 goals helps as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've seen Vanacek played some pretty good hockey back when he was with Washington. He could be that number one guy. Maybe he's not like a superstar, but you know, he can fill the role. But you have to put him in a position to succeed. And I think what the Devils are doing now, and credit goes to Lindy Ruff for pulling it all together, is they're playing solid hockey.
Yep.
And Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier are both healthy, which is wonderful. They're both contributing. So it's all coming together. Like everything that we wanted to see from New Jersey over the years, whether it's, you know, those two, and then obviously Bratt has been fantastic for the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. You know, they're getting solid goaltending. Dougie Hamilton is putting up points from the blue line as well. It's all coming together. So right now things are looking pretty nice in New Jersey.
Well, I think that they had a really good offseason. You know, like although that he's hurt right now, Andre Plott is always going to be a good addition. I mean, we saw just covering the Cup final just how beloved he is by coaches, just specifically. Like he is a guy who is like coaching. I think it was it Paul Maurice who referred to, I think it was Brian Little or something, as like coaching porn back in the day. Like he said that, and I think Palat's like that. But they had a lot of really good, like they were able to re-sign Yogi Siegenthaler for a really good deal.
And they love him.
And they love him, and he's good too. You know, Damon Severson is contract year Damon Severson right now. He's playing. He's probably not going to be back next year, but he's playing for it.
Yeah.
And another thing, and obviously you said having Dougie Hamilton, you have your superstar defenseman. You know, this is the guy that they pay an absurd amount of money for. He's the big ticket guy that he's finally performing like that. But I think the biggest X factor, at least when it comes to the suppression you're talking about, the fact that they've turned into just an incredibly efficient defensive team, is John Marino.
Mm-hmm.
That was, under the radar, one of the best pickups of the offseason. He has, I believe, when it comes to game score, he is one of the top players in the entire league in average game score this season. He was a guy who put up pretty much no offense in Pittsburgh. He was always a good defensive guy, never put up any offense. He's got 4 points in 9 games right now, so he's contributing a bit on that end. But he is like the legitimate top four shutdown guy that this team really, really needed on its back end. You know, the guy who can give Dougie Hamilton sort of like a shift off or so.
Right.
He doesn't have to do everything. He has really turned the construction of that blue line around, and it's working gangbusters. Like you said, like 24, no more than 24 shots allowed. in all of Vitek Vanacek starts.
Yeah.
And look, as a Vitek Vanacek fantasy owner last year, let me say that he is good,
yeah,
but he's definitely not a superstar. Okay.
No.
I would say he's more of like a 1B in my eyes. He always was.
Yes, I agree.
But he's playing like a 1A right now.
That's right.
And you know what? Like you said, they're putting him in position to succeed. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of, like, you know, Ryan Graves, John Marino, Dougie Hamilton, you know, Dawson Mercer's coming up. I wrote a great feature on Igor Sharangovich last year. They love him. They're really excited about what he can do. Even a guy like Alexander Holtz hasn't done anything for them yet. Mm-hmm. But he's a guy who's like, he's a top 10 pick,
yep,
a guy lurking in their system, waiting to break out. There are a lot of really, and then we were talking about before, they don't even have the second overall pick up on the roster right now. Simon Nemec, who is also killing it in the AHL right now.
Yeah.
He's playing really well, but he's not even on the roster yet.
And that's what you want, right?
Yes.
You want guys like Holtz and Nemec to have to really push to get into the lineup. You want it so that, you know, if somebody goes down, you have someone that's like chomping at the bit, or champing at the bit, to get into the lineup and contribute. And, you know, we've seen New Jersey suffer for that in the past, particularly, you know, last year when it came to goaltending, where big time struggles, big time injuries. You know, they ended up bringing up Nico Daws to play much sooner than they probably would have preferred because he is so young.
Like, and 3 years before they probably
exactly.
Liked him.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, he had some decent games. I was actually at one of them where they beat Colorado.
Ooh.
I know. And it was a comeback too. But, you know, ideally, Nico Daws is, you know, one of your top goaltending prospects, where you keep him in the AHL for a couple of years, and then once he's certainly ready, you put him into that position. But now, yeah, like you said, the depth is so much greater, and the contributions are coming at all the right places, where it's just seeming to line up right now.
Yeah, I remember covering a game last year where I was watching Akira Schmid try to stop Austin Matthews shots, and it did not go very well. No. So this is, and what's cool about this too, Eric Halla has also been a very good addition. Halla, you know, like, he hasn't actually scored yet, but he's just fit in really well with the team.
Yeah.
They really should have paid Jesper Bratt during the offseason. I don't get the organization's, like, sort of humming and hawing over whether or not they want to commit to this player.
Mm-hmm.
He's 24 years old. He was 23 in the offseason.
Yep.
That's how time works.
It's true.
Almost
every year?
By my calculations. Yeah. But, like, this guy, he was a point-per-game player last year. He was close to that the year before. You know, he's got 15 points in 9 games, 4 goals, 11 assists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's over an assist per game. He's an incredible playmaker. He's averaging over 17 minutes a night. This guy's going to command a lot of money this season because he's an RFA again. I would say if there was one thing I could critique, you know, putting on my food critic from Ratatouille, I believe it's Anton Ego is his name. They should have given Bratt an extension, or if they wanted to, traded him, like just, you could have gotten a great sort of like package of assets, but they didn't, and he's performing really well. And look, all we can do is ride the fun that's going now. They're a fun team to watch, man.
Totally.
Like this is so far different than I would say, like, the Devils teams of their prime before, where it was just like, yeah, they were doing great, but they were just a slog to watch.
Yeah.
This is like a fun, like, Jack Hughes, Nico Hischier. Like, Hughes is a fun player to watch.
Dougie
Hamilton's a fun player to watch, man.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see what happens in New Jersey moving forward. All right. You're the prospect guy.
Indeed.
We were in Bell Center when the Montreal Canadiens and three other teams, I guess, decided to pass on Shane Wright.
Yes.
We thought it was crazy.
Yes.
We thought it was, as Stephen A. Smith would say, blasphemous.
Right.
And yet here we are. You know, Slavkovsky's looking pretty good at the NHL level.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out we were overreacting like crazy when we thought that he was not doing well. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Shane Wright, on the other hand, is watching most games from the press box. He's only, when he gets in the lineup, he's averaging 6 minutes and 35 seconds per night. He has one assist, but the underlying numbers in that very extremely small sample size are not great.
Mm.
What do we do here?
Yeah, so, I mean, Seattle has said there's a plan here, and...
Is there? That
is there?
I don't know, man.
I mean, there's been a lot of talk, but here's my thing. I don't mind Shane Wright spending some games in the press box because you can learn a lot up there, especially as an 18-year-old, where you just get a sense of the whole game. You can sit there with people from the Kraken, and they can, you know, they can talk you around situations and say, look what this guy did here, look what happened here. So I don't mind that. But when you do play him, it's got to be 12 to 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you're not learning anything about him playing him 6-7 minutes a night. And he's not learning anything playing 6-7 minutes a night. Because if you think about it, if you know that you're only going to get a couple of shifts, you want to try to earn more, but are you going to be playing your best in those shifts? Or are you going to be nervous that if you screw up, you're going to get even less time? So that's my concern here, is I don't understand what the play is. Sit him for some games, that's totally fine. But when you do play him, play him.
Yes.
And, you know, this kind of reminds me, it's not the exact same situation, but to me it's analogous to Steven Stamkos' first year in Tampa Bay, where Barry Melrose clearly didn't trust him early on. Stamkos really struggled. They fired Barry Melrose, who never worked behind a bench again.
Nope.
Stamkos flourished. Mm-hmm. Now, I would say it's easy to call Stamkos a Hall of Famer based on everything he's done in his career. I'm not saying Shane Wright is going to be Steven Stamkos. They're different types of players. But I'm just going to say that I need Dave Haxtell to show me what the plan is.
Yes.
Because I don't see it right now.
A lot of people have also brought up the Joe Thornton comparison. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, like a center, talented guy who took like two, three, four years to really get going. But you're right. Like, Dave, I don't understand why Dave Haxtell keeps getting chances. You know, like the blue line under him in Toronto was among the worst it's ever been. The Philadelphia Flyers under his purview just completely collapsed. I know that we're talking about that now when Philly's supposed to be a basement dweller again, but like
they're hot.
ask any Flyers fan about what their I guess perception of Dave Haxtell is. It's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be great.
It's not good.
And so I don't know if he's the guy to trust with such a prized, but also at the moment fragile asset. Mm-hmm. Because it's sort of like, you know, he's 18 or 19, whatever. I'm 26, so I'm not exactly his age, but I guess I'm sort of in the generation. So, and I liken it to during the pandemic when my former employer like cut me down to one piece a month, you know, and I thought, and I just went like, oh, all the pressure's on this one piece.
Right.
You know, I have to like I have no opportunity to prove myself. It's only on this one piece. And I ended up overthinking it way too much. And they were likely some of the worst pieces I've ever produced, you know? Mm. And I think that's a lot what Shane Wright's doing. How many shifts a game is 6 minutes? It's like five, maybe?
Yeah.
Five or six? Like,
yeah.
Most players, when they step over the boards onto the ice, they don't have to think about how, okay, well, this is going to be a quarter of my usage, basically.
Yeah.
I have to make it count. I have to do something every little. They're just trying to be in the middle, react to the play, be in the zone. Shane Wright's trying to be like, everything I do is going to influence whether or not I even see the ice again moving forward. Mm. It's putting him in the worst position to succeed. I don't see the plan because they've already talked about how they want to keep him in the NHL.
Yeah.
So sending him down to Kingston is probably not going to be the way to go. And there is some validity to maybe sending him down there and letting him just absolutely like massacre that league.
Right.
Like he did very well last year, but it wasn't necessarily like the crazy stat lines we see from a top prospect in his final year of OHL eligibility. He's not doing what Connor Bedard's doing to the OHL
right now.
But so there might be some validity to sending him down, letting him just absolutely like throttle that league to the point that it's not fair, and then bringing him up and giving him that confidence. But they're like, what's the plan? Like you have him in the press box. I don't care how many like sort of development coaches are sitting around him and coaching him during the game. When you put him out on the ice, he's not like, you're not putting him out on the ice for more than 7 minutes a game.
Yeah.
What can he possibly do? This is a player who is used to playing big minutes. When's the last time Shane Wright logged less than like 16 minutes a night on any team he's played? World Juniors, Juniors, you know, I don't even know if he played in it, Ivan Holinka, anything. Anything dating back to when he was like 4 years old.
Yeah.
This is a completely foreign thing for him. It's not putting him in the best position to succeed.
It's not. And, you know, the only thing, I wouldn't send him back to Kingston, but the compromise I could see is loaning him out to the World Junior team.
Yeah.
And then bringing him back after. Because then he gets a very prominent role, obviously, and, you know, he can get a lot of scoring touches.
We're going there, so I would love that.
Sure.
That would be great for our interests.
Yeah. Wright and Bedard back together again.
I think we should hop on that. I think we should hop on that trend now and make it happen.
Yeah.
We should be the propaganda. You know how they made John Scott go to the All-Star game?
There you go.
That's us right now.
Exactly. Rory Fitzpatrick.
Let's get blacklisted, baby. Let's do it. No, but you're right. I don't see the plan. And as a prospect guy in yourself, Like this must be chaff in your boots.
Sure.
It must be really annoying you.
Yes.
Okay. There you go. All right. Speaking of things that are annoying people, I'm not sure if you noticed, Ryan, because we live in Toronto. We wake up in Toronto. The city is about to explode. It's not just because we had a mayoral election lately. It's not just because, you know, well, it's because the Toronto Maple Leafs are in a state of disaster, I would say. I wrote a column for thehockeynews.com earlier this week, on Friday, actually. And it was after they lost in overtime to the San Jose Sharks. And and I was saying the Leafs are in a tailspin. And I got about 50 replies saying, I'm delusional. They're not in a tailspin. They're still tied for second in the division. It's 8 games in. It's no big deal, blah, blah, blah. We're like 4 days removed from that, and people are ready to like burn Sheldon Keefe's house down.
Right.
Like this is a disaster. And if you look at there's a great chart that was brought up because Mitch Marner after the Leafs. So the Leafs went on their Death Valley road trip.
Yep.
They only got two points out of a possible 4 games. So 2 out of a possible 8 points. They look terrible. The teams they were playing they haven't played a team that's made it out of the first round yet. They've dropped games to the tanking Montreal Canadiens, the tanking Arizona Coyotes, the tanking San Jose Sharks, the up and coming, I would say, Los Angeles Kings. But then they blew a 3-1 lead to the. They're not supposed to be tanking, but literally the 32nd place team in the league, Anaheim Ducks.
Yes.
It's really bad right now.
I guess so.
You're one of those, huh?
I'm totally one of those where, to me, it's like, okay, yeah, it was a bad road trip, no doubt. They haven't played well this season yet. They're still a 500 team. It's still early. And I kind of look at it where if this had happened in February, for example, if the Leafs had a bad road trip in February, would everybody be going for the torches and pitchforks? Maybe they would because it's a huge hockey market.
They absolutely would.
Prone to, overstatement. But, you know, I look at this team and, I mean, it's a solid roster. They've got a couple of injuries that do not help, and they obviously have cap problems. But, you know, we're going to see more offense coming.
You would hope so.
You know, like, we're going to see more from Mitch Marner. We're going to see more from Austin Matthews. Like, Tavares is getting his points on the power play at least.
Tavares has been very good.
Yeah, Tavares has been very good. So it's coming. It's just the timing of it, I recognize that because it's the beginning of the season and you see teams like Buffalo doing great.
And Philly.
And Philly. Yeah. Teams that were, you know, in prior years were not used to having these roles. But you know what? Like, I've seen Tampa get off to bad starts, and nobody blinked an eye because it's like, And granted, Tampa Bay has won Stanley Cups, so they've earned that right. The Maple Leafs have not. But I think if it continues on like this, I would say November they have a lot of home games.
They do.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's nice as long as the fans don't throw things at them. Obviously big test against Philly this week. I think that's going to be kind of the acid test. How do they perform against a team that has overachieved so far this season? If they lose that game, then obviously the mountain gets a little higher to climb. But if they win it, then I think it's kind of a good sign that, you know, at least internally, there isn't as much panic as there is externally.
There is... I think you bring up some very valid points, but I think, you know, I have a political science degree, so I've heard this many, many times before, to play devil's advocate,
right,
if you will.
I thought you were going to say get a job.
Oh, well, clearly I need to work on that. But this is an unacceptable start. Like, we've seen Tampa and like you said, go off to rough starts. They've never had anything riding, or maybe not to the extent of the Leafs have their entire sort of era of hockey riding on this season. If they don't make it at least past the first round, keep in mind, the Leafs are, yes, they're off. They're going to say they're trying to win a Stanley Cup. They're going to say this, but like, their goal is to clear what is literally like the lowest possible bar that most contenders and teams of their ilk, do they want to be considered as, are.
Totally.
It's winning a playoff series.
Yeah.
Like, the freaking Vancouver Canucks have done that before the Leafs have done, have. You know, the like, anyone can do that. The New York Rangers, who had terrible underlying numbers all last year, did. You know, it should not be that difficult. And so after the Los Angeles game, I believe, Mitch Marner came out, and Mitch Marner had a nightmare weekend. He was directly responsible for two of the goals against in the game against the Ducks. He then, like, took a stick, walked down the hall, apparently smashed the crap out of it, and then came back. After he got benched for one shift he got benched. He still finished over 20 minutes of ice time as a forward, which usually doesn't happen. I think people are also annoyed that, like, Sheldon Keefe had to walk back his comments about the elite players not playing like elite players. I was in the press room when he said that. It was not, he didn't say it maliciously. He didn't say it, you know, pointedly. He just said it matter-of-factly, and it was a fact. And the fact that he had to, like, post a retraction the next day is pretty embarrassing. So then Marner, after the LA game, said, you know, oh, we started pretty slow last year, too. People tried to think it was a disaster. And we righted the ship. Things are going to be fine. So there's a great stat going around. Or a great chart going around, where last year, after the first 10 games, what were the Leafs' stats like? Is this like last year? So I'm going to go through some of them with you. So last year, in 2021, the Leafs had a 64.81% Corsi 4 per 60. This year, it's 58.12, so that's worse. Their Corsi against per 60 is worse. Their Corsi 4, straight up percentage, is worse. Their Fenwick is worse. Their Fenwick against is better. Oh, great. Their Fenwick 4 is percentage is worse. Their goals 4 per 60 is worse. Their goals against per 60 is a little bit better. So there you go. Could be that they've actually gotten really good goaltending. We'll get into that. Their goals 4 is percentage is worse. They're getting outscored before, where they were almost getting tied even and basically getting outscored by one goal or whatever. They're now only producing 44.2% of the goals 4 in the game. So that's not great. Their shots 4 per 60 is worse. Shots against a little bit better. But their shots for just percentage is worse. Their expected goals per 60 is worse. Their expected goals against is worse. Their expected goals for is worse. Their shooting percentage is worse. And yet their save percentage is better. So they're getting better goaltending and basically worse across the board and everything else. So when we use the conversation of, oh, well, they did this last year and they righted the ship and it's fine. No, this isn't like last year. They're playing bad hockey. Their stars... At least their stars from the Matthews and Marner perspective, they look dazed. They look like they're not themselves. Yeah. They're getting very good goaltending from Ilya Samsonov. I shudder to think where they would be without him.
Totally.
But when you look at it, their blue line is porous. You know, they have a guy. Their two best defensemen are, yes, it's TJ Brody, who's always going to be the pillar of stability. But I would say the guy tied for 1B is a 39-year-old who signed for minimum wage so the rest of the team could get their money and be good.
Right.
Their stars aren't producing on offense. And one of their two reclamation projects, like, tore his abductor, or adductor, whatever you want to call it, in morning skate after one game. So things are not going great. And I would say, like, I don't think Sheldon Keefe is in danger of getting fired yet. I had him third on my coach's hot seat power rankings yesterday, just because I think they're, like, you know, because of the ties he has to Dubas and just sort of, like, the process-oriented way of the Toronto Maple Leafs organization.
Yeah.
But things are creeping up, and some of his decisions, like having to walk back those comments, but also not recognizing that Justin Hall is a 13-minute-a-night defenseman opposed to, like, a 17, 18, 19-minute defenseman. How... You know, when you're trying to get something out of your forward core, why would you not split up the struggling line in Matthews and Marner, and instead they split up the only line that's really working in Nylander and Tavares? You know, there's a lot of things that are going wrong here. Like you said, the test against Philly is going to be extremely important because, yes, it's an overachieving team, but they're also really bad. And you should be able to, at home, after a couple days off, you should be able to run their show. And if you don't, the noise is only going to get louder and potentially lead to some consequences.
Yeah, and I think the big sort of existential crisis is some teams miss their window to win. It happens. Toronto does not want to be that team, but you do have to ask yourself, at what point do our stars age out of their prime and we don't get the desired result, which is a championship run? Now, they've got years on that, but again, it's the surrounding cast that they've had trouble fitting under the cap, making everything work that way. And then, of course, you know, Jake Muzzin injured again, which is a big hole. on that decor, which you alluded to. The penalty kill is really bad, too.
Yes.
So, I mean, maybe there's a shakeup. Maybe it's not Keefe, but maybe there's a shakeup behind the bench in a different way to address things like that. But, yeah.
It's tough because, first of all, like behind the bench, like Keefe spoke on at Media Day about how excited that he was that all of his coaches were back from last season for the first time in his tenure as Leafs coach. Like before, you know, Dave Hacksaw went to go to coach Seattle and, you know, DJ Smith went to coach Ottawa and all that kind of stuff. But, like, so this is Dean Chenoweth, Manny Malhotra, and someone else that I am blanking on when it comes to his name. But this is, like this is people who are saying, you know, people who are overreacting might need to slow the roll a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's only 10 games, but, you know, that's, like, we're over 10% of the season. Like, this is... Yep. It's the best division in the league. It's only going to get tighter. Mm-hmm. And you've left a lot of points on the board. Like they had a really slow, really home friendly, and also just like in terms of competition, really easy, soft start to the schedule.
Yeah, it's true.
You could have started out like Boston, 8-1 or whatever they are.
Yeah.
And banked a ton of points and really, you know, sort of soared to home ice advantage and the weakest playoff opponent you can possibly get. And instead, they're probably going to be scrapping for that same, you know, second or third place division, divisional spot again, depending on whether or not they can make up this rope. And they might have to play a team like Tampa again. They might have to play a team like Florida, who, yes, isn't as good as last year, but still has
Boston.
Or they have to play Boston again. Yeah. And, like, this is not maybe a disaster yet, but it's getting close to it. The vibes don't seem very great there. The pressure is mounting. The noise is starting to get louder. It's buzzing. Mm. There needs to be something that changes really, really quickly, because this is starting to creep into disaster territory.
Yeah.
And it's not, and I would say it's not even on the coach. The players need to figure this out. I wrote this last year, last week, and this will be the last time we talk about this topic until they win, is that Dubas has gone out and gotten them everything they could have needed. They needed to upgrade their center depth in 2018. He signed the biggest free agent in salary cap era history to that point, John Tavares. They needed to upgrade their defense. He went out and acquired Jake Muzzin for no roster in exchange for no active roster pieces. You know, they needed goaltending after Frederik Andersen got hurt and Michael Hutchinson was their number one. Okay, so he went out and he acquired Jack Campbell, you know, for pennies on the dollar, and he became, you know, their consistent, basically starting goalie for the next 3 years. Even last year, they needed a little bit of a D upgrade. They didn't need it, but they could have used it. Mm. He went out and he got Mark Giordano for a second round pick and no roster pieces again, and then managed to re-sign him for $800,000 per year for 2 years to ensure that the rest of the team is top notch and gives him a chance at winning a cup. Mm. And those are just a couple moves. Yes, he's not perfect, but he's gone out and he's given them everything. He fired the highest paid coach in hockey to placate them, to make sure that they were the vibes were good for them, because they straight up gave up on Mike Babcock, and I think that they were warranted to do that. Mm-hmm. But still, the players gave up on their coach, and Dubas was like, all right, so here it is. Here's a guy who, you know, has coached a lot of you in the minors, who is who knows you, and his mandate is to make things fun again.
Yeah.
And he did that, and now we're starting to talk about has he lost the room too? At what point do the players need to sort of dig themselves out of this?
Yeah, that's fair.
That's my point. Anyway, speaking of panic, the Anaheim Ducks, disaster start to the season for them. This is a team that is not supposed to be this bad.
Yeah.
They signed Ryan Strome. They signed Frank Vatrano.
Yeah.
You have Trevor Zegras. You have a really, you know, you have John Gibson, who hasn't been as good, but is still sort of projected to be, like, you signed John Klingberg. You signed those three guys, you're not tanking, okay?
Yeah.
Like, you signed Vatrano, Strome, and Klingberg. You're expecting to be at least middle of the pack. Mm. They're now far and away the worst team in the league at this point. They're across the board. In every sort of underlying statistic I just mentioned with the Leafs, they're 32nd ranked.
Uh-huh.
It's really bad. Dallas Eakins' hot seat is nuclear hot. It's the Chernobyl reactor, right? Seconds before it blows. And then they were dealt an even worse sort of blow, I would say, yesterday, when it was announced that Jamie Drysdale, hotshot young defenseman, has been lost for the season with a torn labrum. How bad is this badness, Ryan?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate for Drysdale. I would disagree. I think you bring in those veterans to help your young core grow. My expectations for the Ducks were actually pretty low this year.
Were you expecting them to be like in competition for the number one pick, though?
Yeah, around
really?
That.
Really? Okay,
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I thought they'd be near the bottom because they're still...
Agree to disagree.
Yeah, they're still bringing those assets. You got to remember, too, they lost Ryan Getzlaf after retirement, so it's like you needed another veteran center.
Yeah. How good was Getzlaf towards the end, though? Like, was he still...
I mean, he was fine, but yeah. It's like, you know, you need sort of that... Yeah, like, Strome is a good guy, I think, sort of an equivalent at that mm-hmm. point. Because Zegras is your guy, right? He's your guy for now on. But what I really don't like about the Drysdale situation is here's a kid that's still only 20 years old.
Yeah, he's really young.
Yeah, really young, and you know, certainly has earned his NHL time because he is that prototypical modern NHL defenseman, that great puck mover, so smart, so calm back there. You know, playing 17 minutes a night, so he wasn't being overloaded. But now he's out, 4 to 6 months, so it could be the season, depending on... you know, how he heals and recovers and what Anaheim needs from him. Let's face it, at the time, it might just behoove them for him to take the rest of the year off and just make sure that everything is good for next season. Mm-hmm. The thing that really kind of sticks with me is that they waived Josh Mahura. And now Josh Mahura is one of the best possession players in the NHL playing for Florida. And it's like, oh... That hurts in terms of asset management. And you know what? It has not been a straight incline for Josh Mahura in terms of development. So at the time you say, okay, well, you know, I mean, the Ducks, they had to move on. You know, they got to make roster decisions. But when you see a young player like Mahura, who I think is only a couple of years older than Drysdale, he's still very young. It's like, oh, man. They could really use Josh Mahura right now, and it's all hindsight.
They gave him away for free. That's the thing.
Exactly. Like, it was free.
If you wanted to give
free
up
for
on
the
him,
Panthers.
Yeah. If you wanted to give up on him and trade him, at least you got an asset back.
Yeah.
How lowly of an asset that would be is up for debate.
Yeah.
But just being like, here you go, Florida Panthers. Yeah. Take this guy. We won't need him, and then.
And it's like, yeah. So I mean, all the best to Jamie Drysdale. He's such a fun player to watch. But because he is so young, it's really tough because this is, even though he's in the NHL, he's still developing.
Yes.
And this would have been a crucial year to do that.
Absolutely.
Especially as a defenseman. Again, look at Rasmus Dahlin in Buffalo, mm-hmm. how he has hit another level this season. You know, he's been in the NHL for several years now, and it's been that progression, and then all of a sudden you got that jump. So maybe this was the year where we would have also seen a jump from Drysdale. Now it gets pushed back at least the season. So that's unfortunate.
Just on the Ducks conversation, so you thought a team with Troy Terry, Trevor Zegras, Ryan Strome, Frank Vetrano, Mason McTavish, Jakob Silverberg, John Klingberg, Kevin Shattenkirk, Cam Fowler, John Gibson, Adam Henrique, guys, like, you thought they were going to be challenging for the bottom of the league? Like, that's not bad.
It's not bad, but it's basically what they had last year.
That's true. Yeah. I just think that like them being like far and away the worst team in the league just by every metric, like when you really look at it, when it comes to possession, goal differential, you know, power play, special teams, everything, like I think that's pretty disappointing.
Yeah, I don't think I certainly thought San Jose would be probably worse this year.
Or Arizona even?
Like Arizona. I mean, Arizona's in a different division now, so it's like, you know, you gotta play around with that. But no, I mean, I certainly thought Arizona would be worse. I thought Chicago would be worse.
Yes.
But I didn't see Anaheim as a playoff threat. Like,
No.
The Kings are a playoff threat in that division.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like Calgary, Edmonton, Vegas, and then you kind of have the rest in the Pacific, so.
It's not great. Yeah, like you said, this is a very important developmental year for Jamie Drysdale. He got 8 games of it, and he's going to miss it all. That's a shame.
Indeed.
Speaking of the Sharks, though, a guy who, you know, has had injuries in the past but is back now, Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
11 points, 11 games. He's looking like his former self.
Point per gamer.
He's looking like that $11.65 million defenseman that he was signed for. I mean, don't you just love to see it?
You know, I do, because... here's a guy that literally lost part of his ankle in surgery. And it looked, and for a guy that made his bones on his skating, his puck moving ability,
his transition.
His transition game, you know, I mean, he's basically an analytics legend.
Yes.
When he came up, you know, he sort of came up and he crested when analytics was really taking
hold. When the Corsi Wars were in there.
The Corsi Wars, exactly. So it is nice to see him back. And, It got me thinking, and I almost had this in rapid fire. It's like, does he get Norris votes?
I think
he keeps this pace? I'm not saying he's going to win, but does he get down ballot? he probably, you know, if he keeps this pace, why not, you know? Especially with Brent Burns gone. I mean, San Jose needed him to contribute even more than he had been since he got to town. And he's doing it. And, yeah, he's just, he's such a fun guy to cheer for. He had, like, a full-body Sharks outfit given blue steel for the Instagram.
He's very cool.
It was awesome.
He's, like, he's just a good dude. Like, he's always been a good dude. Everyone, every person who interacts with him has, I've never actually interviewed him before, but everyone who has, have you?
I have.
Would you say he's a good dude?
Super nice guy.
There you go. He always has fun interactions with Sean McKenzie, you know, when it comes to their fashion. You know, he's been through a lot, him and his wife, and come back from it. Like, he's just someone that you really want to root for.
Yeah.
And look, you always hate it when injuries rob an elite athlete of their prime. You
know,
when they're trying to come back and you see that, oh, there's just something missing, you know? Like, I'm trying to think of an example, like, you know, just any running back who's
Bo Jackson.
Yeah, Bo Jackson. Or, you know, just guys, or even... for a little bit, right now, Klay Thompson, for example, in the NBA.
Oh, okay.
He tore his ACL and Achilles, and you know, he was one of the best players in the NBA, and he's come back, and he's only looked okay, and you go like, yeah, he's fine. He's out there, but like, you just see, every time you see him, you see like the harsh realities of father time and all that.
Right.
Just now, he's like, the fact that he's back, he's playing the kind of hockey that he wants to. He's averaging like 24 minutes a night. You know, he's just tearing up. He's got like a 60% Corsi forward for him right now. Point per game player.
Yep.
Looking like the guy who was making like alley-oop passes in the playoffs. I love it. I love it. He's a very easy guy to root for. I think San Jose was always a great landing spot for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's California. It's a great place to raise your family, but it's also just somewhat out of the public light where he doesn't have to deal with all the harsh sort of negativity that he did in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And now finally it's starting to come together for him.
Yeah.
I love it. I love to see it.
And quick San Jose note. I've been thinking about this lately with their new uniforms.
Oh, they look so good.
Another franchise you can think of that literally hasn't missed once when it came to their uniform?
I think San Jose's missed.
Really?
I do. I think like,
you didn't like the black ones?
I didn't like they're all blacks.
Okay.
The ones with like the numbers on the front.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like numbers on the front.
Oh, okay.
But they're very close. Like they're gray. Like the ones with gray in it in the 90s were great.
Yeah.
These teal ones though, my God.
They're so good.
They're incredible. Like anyone who was, I remember they were mixed. Like the reception of them were mixed on Twitter in the summer. Have you lost your minds? Do you have any taste?
I think too, and we've seen this with some of the reverse retro jerseys, like the first Minnesota one. When you add the pants and some of the other uniform elements, then it's like, now
like
I see
the whole
picture.
Like the all teal? I'm like,
yeah.
I'm so glad I didn't go black pants, or I'm so glad. It is just, and seeing Eric Carlson in that uniform, it's just incredible. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
There are very few teams that haven't missed. I would say San Jose is batting like .900 right now.
Yeah.
Like very good.
Yeah.
MVP numbers. All right, Ryan, mailbag time?
Mailbag. We got one mailbag question for today.
One good one. It's which current NHL first years do you think are going to burn year one of their ELC?
That was not the one I was thinking of.
Oh, okay.
But since you mentioned it, I think we're going to see, you know, obviously Slafkovský.
Yeah.
You know, probably David Yurecek at this point.
Yeah.
You know, because they've had some injuries in Columbus, although I guess that one's sort of up in the air. You know, I do think Shane Wright will burn. And then I would say Wyatt Johnston.
He's already there.
He's there now.
It's been announced that,
he's
sticking around.
He earned it.
Yeah, he's looked really good.
Yeah.
And you just got to keep him around for that wholesome family moment after
exactly.
his first. Like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
You can't send that guy down.
Those would be the ones that I would think of right now that come to mind.
Yeah. All right, it's from our, this one's actually from our.
Not that one.
I'm only seeing
from
two.
Jonathan?
Yeah.
No. The one was the William Wallander one.
I
have it on mine at Michigan Roman. Because, the Jonathan one was too much homework.
Maybe it's a private account because I'm only seeing these two replies under your tweet.
Really? Okay,
if you've memorized it.
So the question was about William Wallander, the Detroit Red Wings prospect, and what his ceiling is.
Okay.
And for me, Wallander, or it's probably Wallander. Technically.
It's probably Wallander.
Probably William Wallander.
Or Wallander.
For those on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got a lot of good potential. And I actually looked back, because right now he is second on team scoring with Rogla, tied for second with 11 points on the year. I believe Adam Tambellini is first
Ooh.
With 13 points. And he's a defenseman, mm-hmm. but he's got size, moves the puck real well, obviously doing very well offensively. I looked back at my scouting notes, and what my Swedish people were telling me back in 2020 was, yes, he has all these great elements. What we want to see is him really sort of push to be the guy.
Yes.
So to me, he's getting there now. If you're tied for second in team scoring, and you're still a very young man playing for Rögle in Sweden, that tells me you're starting to really sort of feel yourself, starting to take over. So for me, I mean, certainly he's top four, but does he have the potential to be even better than that? Mm-hmm. I think this is what we're starting to see, where it's getting pretty exciting with Volland.
You don't see, like, it's tough to score in the SHL. The ice is bigger. You're playing against grown men.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see point per game guys really there very often. So the numbers he's putting up, it's being pretty good. All right. I think it's rapid fire. It's your turn this week.
It's rapid fire, and I'm taking it back. This is old school. Rapid fire has become bloated.
Keep in mind, I am younger than you.
So. Yes, I am keeping this in mind. Okay. I always tailor my rapid fires. So this would be quicker and peppier and more nerve-wracking, hopefully.
Okay.
Because that's what rapid fire is.
If there's
about.
One thing I love, it's anxiety. You know this about me. So let's do it. Let's go.
All right. First question: Green Day or Blink 182?
Green Day.
Okay.
I love Blink. I love them both with all my heart. Okay. But Green Day is my favorite band of all time.
Right.
Yep.
Correct answer? Dillinger 4.
Okay.
Look him up.
Don't even know who that is.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Green Day certainly does. Mm. Next question. Who is your favorite non-Hollywood director?
Non-Hollywood, huh?
Yes. Like, I hazard to say foreign film director.
Foreign film. I thought, yeah. I was like, I'm trying to go through, like, Broadway? Maybe?
No, okay. Like, film director, but not, like, you know, like, in the blockbuster system.
Oh, okay. Yes. I cannot believe I am blanking on his name, but the director of Parasite.
Mm.
He, like, Snowpiercer.
I
can't believe I'm blanking on his name, because Parasite is legitimately the best movie I've ever seen.
Yes.
Just like it's up there on my favorites, but mm-hmm. just in terms of like an actual like if you look at it from a craft perspective.
Yes.
Like from you know, the direction, the payoff, it is the best movie I've ever seen in mm-hmm. terms of how he just combined everything. Snowpiercer is incredible. That's his one like sort of a American movie that he did.
Yeah.
It's great. Like he's a visionary. Bong Joon-ho. There we go. I can't believe, I'm going to, you know, go home and stare at myself in the mirror and just absolutely flog myself for
totally.
Missing that.
Yeah.
An incredible director. Yeah. I think he's my favorite. That's a good question. Outside the Hollywood system, because mm-hmm. there are a couple up-and-comers that I really, really like, but I guess you could consider them in the North American sort of sphere. So yeah, right. I'm going to put it there.
Nice. I'm going to go Takeshi Miike from Japan. People probably know him most for Audition, which is terrifying. But he also does amazing gangster movies like Fudo and Dead or Alive. And I'll never forget, he does like tons of movies.
Yeah.
Zebra Man, I saw at the Toronto International Film Festival at the Midnight Madness years ago, also awesome. But I'll never forget, there's a scene in one of his movies where there's like a big gangster fight and it's in a restaurant and this guy's trying to reach for a gun, but he accidentally puts his hand into like a bunch of like egg yolks and then he's still reaching for the gun and he puts his hand in flour and then he reaches for the gun and he puts his hand into like a deep fryer. So he basically deep fries his own hand.
Sounds
tasty.
Trying
to get his gun. It's hilarious. I love everything about Takeshi Miike. Chan-wook Park that did like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and all the Vengeance movies.
Yeah.
Also awesome.
Whoever did the it might be the same person. Whoever did the original Old Boy.
Yes.
I believe that is
Chan. Yeah.
That movie is incredible.
Totally.
Like it is. I can't believe they ever thought. I can't believe Americans had the audacity of remaking it.
Yeah, I know.
Like that is.
I didn't see the remake because it's like I don't need to.
I like Josh Brolin. He's the main guy. But like that movie, Old Boy, is perfect.
Yeah.
It is incredible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. JT Miller, your boy. He's on fire now.
Oh, yeah.
4 points in his last three games. Vancouver, all of a sudden, not as much despair.
Great to see.
Over under JT Miller, 75.5 points this year.
They'll go over.
Yeah, I'm going to go over too.
He'll hit like 80, 81.
Yeah,
like
I agree.
They'll all be secondary assists because that's his thing. But you know, like he'll do it. I think
2 goals against Penguins the other day.
Oh, I know. I think if he doesn't do over 75, that's a disaster. You're paying this guy the amount of money that you are.
Yeah.
You need him to be at least a point per game guy.
Fair. Next question: how many Taylor Swift songs can I name if I heard them on the radio?
Can you name?
Yes.
Oh, I would say at least 5 or 6.
I believe the answer is 3.
Which ones?
I can name the Never Ever Ever Gonna Get Back Together song, Blank Slate, and Shake It Off. And I am also aware of that early one where she talked about how she wears t-shirts.
Yeah, you couldn't do You Belong With Me?
No.
You couldn't do Love Story?
No.
Or even like even a Teardrops on My Guitar?
Never.
Really? Interesting. Okay, okay.
I only listen to like classic rock radio.
No, I'm aware. I've ridden in cars with you.
88.1, yeah. Everything, it's like, it's at one end of the dial, so I can just switch between the three of them.
I'm like, this is where we miss Steven, because I've driven to the draft with you guys.
Yes.
And I don't think I recognized a single song on our way there. It was great. It introduced me to a lot of great music.
Sure.
But you were, let's just say you're not a Taylor Swift kind of guy.
No. I respect her as an artist, but it's just not of my world.
I can respect, I think what she's doing right now is amazing as an artist. You know, she's literally weaving stories and narratives into her songs so that these new albums are almost like sequels to movies that people want to see in a way. Like it's very great. She's really evolved as an artist. She's not just that, you know, that breakup song kind of person. I think it's great. So, but yeah, I would say I'm surprised. I'm surprised that a couple of them haven't even broached into your realm of like just sheer recognizability. Interesting. Interesting.
Pop culture hermit.
Okay.
Okay, final. This is a rapid fire within rapid fire. This is a little game we like to play. We've done variations of this.
A Russian nesting doll of a rapid fire.
Okay.
Huh?
So the topic is
okay.
Hockey team or band?
That's a very, oh, I love this.
Yes.
I'm ready.
Okay. Number one, the Detroit Cobras. Was that a hockey team or a band?
Cobra seems like a band. I'm going to go band.
You are correct.
Yes.
Detroit Cobras, a fantastic garage cover band.
There you go.
Yes.
See, bands like to do the reptiles. They like to go, you know, White Snake, you know, like Cobra, stuff like that.
True.
So I'm big on that.
Nice,
yeah.
Nice. Okay, number two, the Amarillo Gorillas. Band or hockey team?
Hockey team.
Yes, of the now defunct Central League.
Oh, man.
Fantastic.
Rest in
name.
Peace.
Yes.
Harambe, rest in peace.
Yeah. Number three, band or hockey team? The Academy of Holy Angels.
I'm gonna switch up. I'm gonna go hockey team.
You are correct.
Yes.
Yes. Their most famous player, to my mind at least, Stanley Cup winner Eric Johnson.
No way. Yes. He was on the Academy of Holy Angels?
Yes, it's a Minnesota high school team.
I assume so. I need a jersey that says Academy of Holy Angels on it.
Yeah. And then final one, the New York Dolls, band or hockey team.
That's a band.
You are correct. Trailblazing glam band. Well done, young Michael. 4 out of 4. You have mastered the rapid fire.
Wow. There's going to be a little pep in my step for the rest of the day, right?
As there should be.
Thank you. Well, I believe that's as good a place to end it as any.
Indeed,
I think we did that. I conquered rapid fire. I finally earned the begrudging respect of Ryan Kennedy. I've been working at that for 2 years. Finally. Did it. This is a great episode. Lots of things. I can't wait to come back and see just how different everything we talked about will be next week. Because
exactly.
that's the way the world goes. News cycle goes crazy. I'm Mike Stevens, Ryan Kennedy. We'll see you next week.